Okay, everybody, here we are back online. So we're going to have our Bhagavad Gita class now. And first we're going to chant Jai Radha Madhava. Ready? I think we got the sound. Yeah, sound is on. Video is on. Everything's ready to roll. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Bharadhari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Bharadhari, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Bharadhari, Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Bharadhari, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Yamuna Tira Vanachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravatakacharya Also Teta Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharishila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anandagoti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya Srila Huidas Thakuru Kijai, Rem Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Chidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Shishi Radha Krishna Kopa, Gopinath, Shai Makunda, Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturadam Kijai, Jagadathasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Lasi Devi Kijai, Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Harivam. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna. Shri Mata Bhakta Vedanta Swami, Namini Vistay Saraswati Devi Gaura Chaya Vishesha Sinavali Vashyata Pichitani. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakta Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Somaganat Madanda Shagadan Shina Shlakya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It's only about 4 more days till Janmashtami, so we're very much looking forward to celebrating Janmashtami and Vyas Pooja. Everything will be online to avoid anyone getting infected. So we're going to have our whole program for Janmashtami. Of course, Janmashtami morning, I'm going to be giving a class. And then later on in the day, we'll have some dancing. I will not be dancing, don't worry. And they'll be dancing by Champakalata and her famous troupe of Brajavasis. So, and they will be putting on some episodes from the Lalita Madhava. So it's going to be very, very exciting. So, Brajavasinis and Champaka. And then we'll have the night arti, and then all sorts of other things going on. However, no big programs in the temple with a lot of people. People are going to be coming and taking darshan throughout the day. And there'll be some private abhishekas going on. And as I mentioned before, the dancing. And the next day, everything will be online. Prabhupada's appearance days with the Pushpanjali and everything is going to be online. Probably not at a good time for those in Australia and New Zealand and Fiji, because it's going to be about 11 o'clock our time in the morning, which is about 1 o'clock in the morning in Australia and 3 o'clock in the morning in Fiji and New Zealand. You're welcome to join if you want. Anyway, okay, so now we'll go on to the Bhagavad Gita. We're reading from the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we're going to continue with the 34th text in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And remember, this 10th chapter is called the Opulence of the Absolute, also known as Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti Yoga, that means the opulences of Krishna, or to connect you to Krishna, Vibhuti Yoga. Okay, let me just clear the screen here so I can see everything. So this is a very, very important verse. Mrityu sarvaharas chaham udvavas cha lavishyatam kirti shrir vak chanari nam smithir meda ritik shama. So mrityu, death. Sarvaharaha, all devouring. Cha also, aham, I am. Udbhavaha, generation. Cha also, avishyatam, of future manifestations. Kirtihi, fame. Shri, opulence or beauty. Vak, fine speech. Cha also, narinam, of women. Smitihi, meda, intelligence. Dritihi, firmness. Kshama, patience. I am all devouring death, and I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech. Oops, I'm going to skip this. Memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. Wow. And I'll talk about those qualities in a second. As soon as a man is born, he dies at every moment. Thus, death is devout. It's like one of those hourglasses. I don't know if you've ever seen an hourglass before. But an hourglass is like something that's shaped like a V, and an inverted V in the bottom, but it's three-dimensional, it's not just two-dimensional, and a cone in the top, and an upside-down cone in the bottom. And so, little tiny opening in the glass. And so there's sand in this hourglass. So as soon as you turn it over, the sand starts to trickle out. And the top portion, which the sand is originally, gets less and less and less, and finally there's nothing left. So in other words, as soon as you turn over the hourglass, then the top portion diminishes. So as soon as we are born, then our lifespan diminishes. So we can say I'm 50 years old, or we can say I'm 50 years closer to death. So anyway, so the last stroke is called death itself. That death is Krishna. And Prabhupada, during the war, when they were bombing Calcutta, Prabhupada actually said that he saw the bombs that were falling were a manifestation of Krishna. But he said that particular manifestation is not lovable. As for future development, all living entities undergo six basic changes. They are born, they grow, they remain for some time, stasis. They reproduce. In other words, there are byproducts. Then you get old, dwindle, and finally they vanish. Of these changes, the first is deliverance from the womb, and that is Krishna. The first generation is the beginning of all future activities, and also the last one is, that's death. The seven opulences listed fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience are considered feminine. That's interesting, because you also see that ladies exhibit these things to a very high degree. For example, lady is famous for her dedication and devotion. A lady who is protected brings good fortune. A lady can speak finely, especially more fine than the men do. Generally, you don't find too many ladies, of course, this is Kali Yuga, using four-letter words. If you find a lady uses four-letter words, you say, she speaks like a truck driver. So you use a masculine example there. Memory, ladies usually have better memories. I have one of my god sisters, Narayani. She has the whole Bhagavatam memorized as well as the Gita. So I remember sometimes if I would ask her a question, you know, where is a particular verse or where is this particular subject dealt with in the Bhagavatam, she'll say, okay, the 8th canto, 15th chapter, text 32. I said, oh my God. And then she would recite the verse in Sanskrit and recite the verse in English. So this is amazing. She's perhaps the most intelligent devotee, you know, and probably, of course, that I've met. Intelligence, you know, ladies have great emotional intelligence, and they have great intelligence. Sometimes they get very emotional, and the emotions sort of cover up the intelligence. But you find the ladies can be very determined, steadfast, and patient. Men are usually not that patient. That's why you see sometimes ladies, they're able to sit at office jobs and type all day long because they're patient. Whereas men, they're not patient. In general, there's always exceptions. If a person possesses all of them or some of them, he becomes glorious or she becomes glorious. If a man is famous as a righteous man, that makes him glorious. Sanskrit is a perfect language and is therefore very glorious. If after studying one can remember a subject matter, he is gifted with a good memory or smriti. And the ability not only to read many books on different subject matters, but to understand them and apply them when necessary, is intelligence, medha, another opulence. Of course, there's another word called durmedha, which means some people have really bad brains. And sometimes Prabhupada would translate durmedha or bad brains by the expression that one has gobar brains, it means cow manure brain. Another opulence. The ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness. Dritti. And when one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle, and when one is able to keep his balance both in sorrow and the ecstasy of joy, he has the opulence called patience, shama. That's interesting. Prabhupada actually named some of his female disciples with these particular qualities. There was a lady named Shama Devi Dasi and Dritti Devi Dasi. Very nice. So you ladies, you are very qualified. And as men, we are generally not patient or steadfast or any of these other things. So, next verse. Brihat samatata samnam gayatri chanda sammaham masanam margasir shoham vitunam kusumakaraha. Brihat sama, the Brihat sama, tata also, samnam of the Samaveda songs. Gayatri, the Gayatri hymns, Chandasam of all poetry, Aham, I am, Masanam of months, Marga Shir Shaha, the month of November, December, Aham, I am, Ritunam of all seasons, Kusuma Akara, spring. Of the hymns in the Samaveda, I am the Brihat Sama, And of poetry, I am the Gayatri. Of months, I am Manga Shira, Marga Shira, November, December. And of seasons, I am flower-bearing spring. So Prabhupada explains that it has already been explained by the Lord that among all the Vedas, he is the Samaveda. The Samaveda is rich with beautiful songs. As I mentioned, Samaveda is the song Veda. The Rig Veda is the mantra Veda. The Yajur Veda is the Veda for sacrifices. Yajur. And the Atharva Veda is the Veda sometimes when you want to do recite certain mantras and do curses and have weapons and things like that. That's what the Atharva Veda is for. One of these songs is the Brihatsama, which has an exquisite melody and is sung at midnight. In Sanskrit, there are definite rules that regulate poetry. Rhyme and meter are not written whimsically, as in much modern poetry. I remember I studied some poetry in the university. There was no rhyme or meter. There was one, E.E. Cummings. Some of you might have heard of E.E. Cummings. Hopefully you didn't. But anyway, we studied his poetry. It's just like, is it poetry? I mean, it was an emotional expression. But as far as being poetry, yeah, by American standards, yes. You know, I could just like, by American standards, there was one artist. We're not talking about poetry now. His name was Rothko. And he would have these paintings that were selling for millions and millions of dollars. And what would he do? He would climb a ladder and drop the paint. Sorry about that. He would drop the paint on the canvas. And it was very, very expensive to buy his paintings. So that's American culture, or, you know, Western culture or modern culture. But Sanskrit poetry is just so exact. You have to control your alliterations. You have to control the rhymes, the rhythm, and everything like that. It's a science. Like, for example, if you read Lalita Madhava or Vidagdha Madhava, you'll read exquisite poetry. And some of Rupa Goswami's poems are so amazing that they read the same backwards as forwards. And they rhyme and everything like that. If you take the syllables and reverse them. And some of them are so amazing that the syllables, if you put them in a certain way, they'll read different things forward or backwards, or they'll read different things if you put them in the diagram of a mandanga or a chakra, a wheel, or anything like that. These were absolute geniuses, people like Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, etc. So among the regulated poetry, the Gayatri Mantra, which is chanted by duly qualified brahmanas, is the most prominent. The Gayatri Mantra should not be chanted by someone unless they're initiated and duly qualified. I know that there are groups now where they just like join hands and they dance to the Gayatri Mantra. But there's no potency for them doing that, because in order to have potency in a mantra, guess what? Sampradayavinayahi mantras. You have to receive the mantra in disciplic succession from a bona fide spiritual master. You can't just like, hey, here's a cool mantra. Let me just pick it out. You know, here's a mantra to create a weapon. Just let me pick it out. You can't do that. You have to be initiated into that mantra for it to work. So the statement is that I just quoted in Sanskrit. But if a mantra is received or not received in disciplic succession, the mantra is useless. The Gayatri Mantra is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam because the Gayatri Mantra is especially meant for God realization. It represents the Supreme Lord. And devotees in the movement get this mantra along with other Gayatri Mantras when they take second initiation. This mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. And when one attains success in chanting it, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must first acquire the qualities of a perfectly situated person, the qualities of goodness according to the laws of material nature, in order to chant the Gayatri Mantra. The Gayatri Mantra is very important in Vedic civilization and is considered to be the sound incarnation of Brahman. Brahma is its initiator, and it is passed down from him in disciplic succession. So in other words, to properly chant it, you have to be in the mode of goodness. What does it mean to be in the mode of goodness? The external symptoms of one in the mode of goodness. Sama dhamma kavaksho cham shantu raja mevacha. I'll go through it. One has to be equal poised in all situations. Poised. Just like you said. Sometimes there's this word in English that people use. He has a lot of poise. Referring to he's a very refined person. So equipoise, that means one has to keep it cool in each and every circumstance. Equipoise, sama dhamma. And then one has to be able to control his or her tongue. It's like if you see a sense object that you're attached to and not going to help you in your Krishna consciousness, you, like a tortoise, you pull your limbs, your senses in. No, but even better than that is you think in love of Krishna. Like if I see something that I really like, and I gave the example many times before, that once upon a time I saw some hang gliding and I wanted to go hang gliding. And I thought, would Krishna be pleased? My whole life is dedicated to pleasing Krishna. And then the desire went away as soon as I thought about that. But if I thought, I'm not allowed to go hang gliding. Why am I not allowed to go hang gliding? This Krishna consciousness is so tough. I can't handle it anymore. You can't even go hang gliding and enjoy life. I mean, what's wrong with hang gliding? So if I tried to negate the thought, it would just grow and grow and grow, and then I would sneak out and go hang gliding. For those of you who know what hang gliding is, it means jumping off of a mountain with wings. Yeah, you have these wings. Not that you grow wings, but you have these, you know, wings that you attach to your body and you jump off and you float in the air currents, like that. So, when I thought I meant to please Krishna, then automatically the desire went away. And there was no question of meditating or contemplating it or anything like that. And I can talk about it today. And it went away. And also certain foods that I was very attached to. And I'm not talking about bad foods. There were certain foods that I was very attached to that basically weren't good for my health. Things that many of you are attached to, like having a lot of cheese and pizza and everything like that. And I was very attached then. What happened? This is a whole story. Interesting story. That I was very attached, and I was, when I was a young man, I was experiencing some arthritis pain. And so I went to my friendly doctor, Dr. Leeladhar Gupta, who is a fantastic Ayurvedic physician in Vrindavan, a good friend of mine. I said, what should I do? And he said, stop that pizza. And I said, no, I'd rather die. And he said, oh, he threw his hands up. But then, when I understood, of course I had some special mercy from Lord Shiva and some other great personalities, but when I understood that I had to prolong my life to be able to serve Prabhupada, and I love Prabhupada, then immediately, as they say, cold turkey with a pizza. Not cold turkey. Cold turkey means you stop something all of a sudden. So, that's a funny expression. I never ate turkey after I became a devotee. So, anyway, so then I immediately stopped. And it never bothered me. But if I had just taken the doctor's advice without the spiritual side to it, you know, just a no, 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 can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that, I would have kept eating myself to death. So, anyway, so this is how you overcome these attachments. How you become Dhamma, because we're talking about Dhamma, sense-controlled. Not by thinking, have to control these senses. They're like raging horses. You know, people come to me and say, how can I stop from eating? All day long I'm eating. Actually, it's funny. Prabhupada used to, anyway, in a very much way that would have not been considered politically correct nowadays, he used to chastise his sister for weighing too much. And then Prabhupada would say she always says she doesn't eat, but whatever. So anyway, so sometimes we may, be eating, you know, every time we see something, it goes in our mouth. Like my little chipmunks here, or squirrels, sorry. They demolish whatever plate I put out for them within a few minutes. Doesn't matter whether it's their dinner time or not. They don't worry about the time of day. Of course, they store a lot, too, so which is kind of good because the winter's coming. So anyway, you just think, what pleases Krishna? What's the purpose of my life? I love Krishna. Prabhupada and the spiritual masters. And that's what got me to change my diet. And so that's Dhamma. So Samadhamma, Tapa, is the next quality of someone in the mode of goodness. Tapa means austere, not in a materialistic austere sense, but basically the same thing as Dhamma, accepting things that please Krishna because you love Krishna and rejecting things that don't please Krishna. And then shocham, cleanliness. A Brahmin is very clean. Like usually when we give initiation, second initiation devotee, you say bathing three times a day, or if that's not possible, two times, but a Brahmin has to be revolutionary clean. So chum. And then tolerant. There's other qualities too. Tolerant, religious, studying the Vedic literatures, things like that. So if one is exhibiting these qualities, it's likely he or she is in the mode of goodness, shanti, and is peaceful. Whoops. I didn't turn my phone off. And it keeps beeping. Okay. So, remember, that's a Brahmin. So, and if you're in the mode of goodness, you can chant the Gayatri Mantra properly. Otherwise, your mind will wander. The Gayatri Mantra, we have seven Gayatri Mantras, and they're all meant for approaching Krishna from a different angle of vision. Some of them are like this chapter, Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti Yoga. And some of them are taking shelter of the Guru. And some of them are taking shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And some of them are taking shelter of Krishna and Vrindavan. And some of them are taking shelter of Srimati Radharani. They're very wonderful mantras. So the month of November, December is considered the best of all months because in India, grains are collected from the fields at this time and the people become very happy. And also, it's a good time because usually that is Kartik. It's the harvest season, and then you have the Kartik festivals. And the Kartik is considered the holiest month of the year. Of course, spring is a season universally liked because it is neither too hot nor too cold, and the flowers and trees blossom and flourish. In spring, there are also many ceremonies commemorating Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, this is considered to be the most joyful of all seasons and is the representative of the Supreme Lord Krishna. The next text, Yutam Chalayutam, it's me, Tejas, Tejas Venam Naham, Jayos me, Yavasayos me, Sattvam Sattvavatam Naham, Yutam Gambling Chalayutam of all cheats as me, I am Tejas, the splendor, Tejas Venam, of everything splendid, Aham, I am Jayaha, victory as me, I am. Of Yavasayaha enterprise or adventure, as me I am, Sattvam, the strength, Sattva Vatum of the strong, Aham, I am. I am also the gambling of the cheats. It's not a good quality, but it's one of the big, 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 potent illusions of this world. And I'll talk about gambling in a second. I'm the splendid, I'm the splendor, I am victory, I'm adventure, and I'm the strength of the strong. Prabhupada said, there are many kinds of cheaters all over the universe. Of all cheating processes, gambling stands supreme and therefore represents Krishna. As a supreme, Krishna can be more deceitful than any mere man. If Krishna chooses to deceive a person, no one can surpass him in his deceit. His greatness is not simply one-sided, it is all-sided. Now in the Mahabharata, you'll find so much cheating that Krishna does. I'll just give you one example. Toward the end of the Mahabharata, it looked like Duryodhana and his party, that is the Kurus, were finished. I mean, they were finished. There was basically only Duryodhana and, you know, two or three other people left, and a handful of people left. And the Pandavas were still there, the Pancha Pandavas, the five Pandavas. So how was he going to win? And it was going to be a final, there was going to be a final battle that would decide everything. And this battle was between Duryodhana and Bhimsen. And Bhimsen was the son, or is the son, of the wind. He was so powerful he could lift up elephants and throw them in the air and juggle with them if he wanted to. And Duryodhana wasn't that strong. So what happened is that Duryodhana's mother had a plan. His mother's name was Gandhari. And Gandhari had acquired a lot of mystic powers by keeping her eyes closed her whole life. And the reason she kept her eyes closed, that is, she kept a bandage or blindfold on her eyes, was because her husband was blind. That's Dhritarashtra. And she didn't want to be better than her husband. So she thought, you know, if he's going to be blind, I better be blind too. Of course, that's not really what he wanted. He actually wanted a wife with eyes so the wife could help him more. But anyway, people have their own ideas of what it means to be chaste or good or whatever. So she had done this austerity of wearing a blindfold her whole life, and it was foretold that if she looked at someone for the first time in her life, you know, after she got married, because before she was married, she actually was able to see. As she opened her blindfold, whatever she looked at, like, or at, in someone's body, that part of the body would become like iron or stone, or the person would become invulnerable. Wow. So she decided that her son, Duryodhana, was going to be in the final battle, in the battlefield, in the battle of Kurukshetra. So what she thought is that he's not going to win against Bhimsen unless I do something to help him. And she thought, I can make his body invulnerable by taking off my blindfold and looking at his body. Great. He's going to win. So she told Duryodhana, please come and see me and dress in your birthday suit. That is, your first birthday suit. First birthday is when you're just born, in case you didn't know. In the Vedic system, you count birthdays from the day you were born. In other words, the day you were born was number one, your first birthday. You were 0 years old, and had your first birthday. So it's interesting. Just like this year, I will be too old. That is 71. And so, 71 years old, but it's my 72nd birthday. How about that? So you got more birthday parties than years you were old. That's pretty cool. So anyway, so she says to Duryodhana, just come in your natural state. Okay, Duryodhana, following her advice, you know, he's completely naked. But Krishna comes in the meantime when he's on the way to see his mother. And he says, Duryodhana, why are you dressed like that or not dressed like that? And Duryodhana says, you know, my mother wants to see me like this. And Krishna says, hey, this is a great offense. It's one thing if you're naked before your mother when you're a little baby, but, you know, you're a grown man. This is inappropriate. Do not do that. You should at least cover your midriff. You know, put some leaves, like they used to have fig leaves on Adam and Eve or whatever. So put some leaves or belt of leaves around you. So he puts his belt of leaves around him, you know, tied around the waist. And he goes to see his mother. His mother takes off the blindfold, looks at him. Zoom! His whole body becomes like steel, except for that area that was covered because of Krishna's trick. Okay. Then there's the fight between Bhimsen and Duryodhana, and they're fighting with gloves, and Duryodhana is being hit by Bhimsen again and again and again with his iron club, and it's just bouncing off his chest. Bing! Bing! Right off his chest. He's smiling, and Bhimsen is getting completely exhausted in spite of exerting himself to the fullest. He doesn't know what's happening. You know, why is this happening? And of course, we know in club fighting, you're not supposed to hit someone below the belt. Even in boxing, it used to be like that. I don't know about kickboxing or any of the other types of boxing, but when I was young, you know, the belt and above the belt is where you're supposed to hit. It's kind of stupid, too, because you can hit someone in the face. But anyway. So, what happened is that Krishna motioned to Bhimsen, being very tricky. He started slapping his thighs. And why would he slap his thighs? To give Bhimsen the hint that he should hit Duryodhana below the belt. And that's what Bhimsen did. And then below the belt, Duryodhana was not invulnerable. And Bhimsen was able to break the thighs of Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was lying there writhing in pain. And then Balaram, he saw what happened. And he got really angry and he said to Bhimsen, now you fight with me. Of course, no one could defeat Balaram. He's the strongest of the strong. And Krishna interceded and said, you know, don't you remember there was all this cheating going on? Basically, Krishna said, you know, this whole thing was my plan. And Balaram just had to go put his club down and walk away a little disturbed by the whole thing. So Krishna cheats in so many ways. I mean, another example was the, which we talked about yesterday in Balaram's appearance, say, was the kidnapping of Subhadra. Subhadra is the sister of Krishna and Balaram. So what happened is that Balaram wanted Subhadra to marry Duryodhana because Duryodhana was Balaram's student. Actually, Duryodhana gives his name to Balaram sometimes, and Balaram is called Duryodhana Guru, means the guru of Duryodhana. It's interesting. And so Balaram thought, you know, my sister should marry Duryodhana. You know, he's one of the bad guys, in case you don't know who Duryodhana was. And then Krishna was thinking, oh my God, this can never be. Actually, I want our sister, Subhadra, to marry Arjuna. So he arranged for Arjuna to come to Dwarka dressed up as a sannyasi. I mean, talk about deceit and trickery. He arranged for Arjuna to come and then make eyes at Subhadra and then kidnap her. And they both went away and lived happily ever after. And then Balaram was really angry and Krishna had to placate Balaram. And so again, Krishna was very tricky. There are so many stories of Krishna's trickiness in the Mahabharata and other Vedic literatures. Anyway, so getting back to the point about gambling, you may think, you know, why is gambling supreme? Because gambling puts one in a fervor and one loses. Why do you think Las Vegas is such a big, or the hotels or casinos are such big money makers? If people were winning, how could they build hotels? How could they make money? As they say, the odds of the house are against you. The house refers to the gambling place. So if someone goes, it's like 1,000,000 to 1, they're going to win each time. And they're thinking, just now I'm going to win. I have the perfect system that I can beat the house. And they don't. And so anyway, you see in the Mahabharata, the example, that Yudhisthira Maharaj was so much caught up in the fervor of, or in the fever of gambling, that he gambled away his brothers, he gambled away his kingdom, he gambled away his very wife, because he thought he was going to win. So you may think, oh, that's just imaginary. No. If you go to Las Vegas, Lust Vegas, If you go to Las Vegas, you will see what Krishna is talking about. Even there's little old ladies behind what they call one-armed bandits, those are slot machines, pulling the lever, and they just like to go so much in trance that they actually sometimes faint because they're not eating or not drinking. They pass away, they pass out on the ground, even pass stool or urine. I mean, it's a very common thing. I've been through the Las Vegas airport on my way to somewhere else, and it's filled with these one-armed bandits. Now they're electronic. One-armed bandits where the three things are spinning or something like that. And people are just like wasting their human form of life and losing everything. And in Las Vegas also, you have, outside of every casino, you have a notary public. What does a notary public do? He enables you to sign away everything you own in a legal fashion so that you'll be able to continue gambling, and then you get your car taken away from you. You can go with your title certificate for your car. He notarizes it. All right, this is your security. You lost your car, buddy. And then you have to leave town. Of course, they probably give you enough money for a Greyhound bus to get out of town after they've fleeced you. So this is why Krishna talks about gambling. And it's one of the regulated principles. No meat, fish, eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. It makes one crazy. You can play a game of chess, but not for money. Okay? Chess is all right. You can play certain games, but not for money. Among the victorious, he is victory. He is the splendor of the splendid among the enterprising industrious. He is the most enterprising, most inventive, the most industrious and the hardest worker amongst adventurers. He is the most adventurous amongst the heroes. The strong is the strongest. Krishna is the most of the mostest. When Krishna was present on earth, no one could surpass him in strength. Even in his childhood, he lifted over 9 hill. That's with the pinky of his left hand. No one can surpass him in cheating. Another thing he does is to cheat all of us. He convinces us we're the body. We mentioned this many times before, like a good hypnotist can convince you you're a dog and you bark. So now Krishna has convinced me that I'm an American. And I'm male. And I'm a fantastic sannyasi. He's convinced me of all these things. Whereas all I am is a part and parcel of him and a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of Krishna. But this false ego expands, just like Prabhupada used the expression, puffed up, one becomes puffed up, which is an interesting expression, which is not used commonly in English, that it's basically you become prouder and prouder and prouder, and Prabhupada said puffed up, because he made reference to frogs who have this little pouch under their mouth, and they go ribbit, 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 and they puff it up. No one can surpass him in splendor, and no one can surpass him in victory, and no one can surpass him in enterprise, and no one can surpass him in strength. That is Krishna. And if you find someone who can, we'll worship him as God, but you cannot find anybody most beautiful, most strong, most splendorous, most courageous. So, Vrishchinam Vasudeva Sme Pandavanam Dananjayaha Muninam Apyaham Vyasa Kavinam Ushanam Kavahi. Vrishinam, of the descendants of Rishni, Vasudeva, Krishna and Dwarka, Asmi, I am. Pandavanam, of the Pandavas, Dananjayaha. Arjuna, Muninam, of the sages, Api also, Aham, I am. Vyasaha, Vyasa, the compiler of all Vedic literature. Kavinam, of all great thinkers, Ushana, Kavihil, the thinker. Of the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudeva, that means Krishna who appears in Dwarka, and also Mathura. And of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So he's speaking to Arjuna now, because Arjuna is the greatest of the Pandavas. Okay? He's just presenting himself as the greatest of whatever there is. The sages, I'm Vyas. He's the compiler of the Vedic literatures. And among the great thinkers, I am Ushana. Ushana is Shukracharya, who is the priest of the demons. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Baladeva is Krishna's immediate expansion. Both Lord Krishna and Baladeva appeared as the sons of Vasudev. So both of them may be called Vasudev. You understand? Vasudev. Vasudev. From another point of view, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, all the forms of Krishna that appear elsewhere are his expansions. So what does it mean that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan? What about that story that Krishna got on the chariot of Akrura and left Vrindavan and everybody else was brokenhearted? Yes. But Krishna remained in Vrindavan. That expansion of his left Vrindavan. Vasudeva expansion. Who is not different from Krishna. Vasudeva is Krishna's immediate expansion, so Vasudeva is not different from Krishna. It is to be understood that the Vasudeva referred to in this verse of Bhagavad Gita is Baladeva or Balaram, because he is the original source of all incarnations, and thus he is the sole source of Vasudeva. The immediate expansions of the Lord are called Swamsha, personal expansions, and there are also expansions called Vivinamsha, separated expansions. Let me explain what that means. Swamsha means expansions of the Lord that are non-different from him, that are all God, all what we call Vishnu Tattva, but Krishna acting in different ways. Swamsha, his own or personal expansions. And Vivinamsha means us. We are tiny spiritual souls that are the marginal potency of the Lord, and we're called Vivinamsha, or separated expansion. We are Krishna's expansions. Mami Vangsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhoga Sanatana. Manashakshtani Indriyani Prakatishtani Karshati. That we are Krishna's parts and parcels. An example of what Prabhupada meant by parts and parcels is, let's take the hand. Here's the hand. It's part of the body. But it's parcel because it has its own identity as part of the body, but it's its own specific identity. The hand is not the same as the nose. So in this way, we are part, nor is the hand the whole body. So we're actually part of Krishna. And Krishna also has an existence apart from us. Anyway, among the sons of Pandu, Arjuna is famous as Dhananjaya, which means he who collected wealth, victorious in wealth. He is the best of men and therefore represents Krishna. Among the munis, or learned men, conversant in Vedic knowledge, Vyasa is the greatest because he explained Vedic knowledge in many different ways for the understanding of the common mass of people in this age of Kali. So Vyasa took the original Vedic literatures and he divided them up. You know, there was one Veda, then he divided it in four, and then there's the supplementary Vedic literatures, there's the Upanishads, there's the Vedanta Sutra, there's the Puranas, the Itihasas, that means the histories. Puranas means like the Bhagavatam. There's 18 Mahapuranas, like the Bhagavatam, but six are for those people in the mode of goodness, six are for those people in the mode of ignorance, and six are for those people in the mode of passion. And Vyasa also knows incarnation. Therefore, Vyasa also represents Krishna. Kavis are those who are capable of thinking thoroughly on any subject matter. Among the Kavis, Uchana, Shukracharya, was the spiritual master of the demons. He was an extremely intelligent and far-seeing politician, but not precisely a devotee. Thus, Shukracharya is another representative of the opulence of Krishna. Shukracharya is actually blind in one eye because he made a big mistake. He had many disciples, but in this particular case, Shukracharya's disciple was Bali Maharaj. He was the grandson of Lord Maharaj. Okay. And Bali Maharaj became very powerful because Shukracharya told him to worship Vishnu. Not because Shukracharya is a devotee of Vishnu, but because Shukracharya knew where the dough is. You know, that everything comes from Krishna. At least he knew that. I guess that's karma yoga of a type. So all right, so he told them worship Krishna. He became so powerful, he took over the heavenly planet. The Bali took over the heavenly planets, and he was king of everything, basically. And so Krishna received a complaint. You got to do something about this. So Krishna decided to trick. There's another instance in how Krishna was very tricky. So Krishna decided to trick this Bali Maharaj. So what he did is Krishna appeared as a very cute little boy who was a Brahmin. And he came to Bali Maharaj's ceremony, sacrifice, while Bali Maharaj was doing the sacrifice. And the point is, when a Brahmin appears somewhere, then you have to take care of the Brahmin. You can even stop the sacrifice at that particular juncture. So Bali Maharaj stopped the sacrifice and said, "Oh, my dear Brahmin, what do you want? I can give you a nice wife, money, anything." And Vamana, who was a little dwarf Brahmin, who was Krishna himself, said, "I just want 3 steps of land." And Bali Maharaj said, "This is not so intelligent. I'll give you anything, you know, wife, anything you want. Just ask." He said, "No, Krishna, as Lord Vamana said, no, one is not satisfied with 3 steps of land. One is not going to be satisfied with the whole universe." And Bali Maharaj said, "All right, I will give it to you, but let me pour some water from this sacred pitcher to signify that I'm going to do this." And Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, Shukracharya, said, "No, don't do it. He's Krishna, he's Vishnu, he's going to take away everything." And Bali Maharaj said, "No, I have to keep my promise." Because you see, in those days, demons were actually promise keepers. They were chaste. So anyway, so Bali Maharaj went to pour the water, and Shukracharya, his spiritual master, by his mystic powers, made himself very small, so Bali Maharaj couldn't pour the water. The spout of the water pot was stuffed up with Shukracharya. He made himself so small he could stuff it up. And so Vamana, who was Krishna, took a little blade of gucha grass and poked in the hole of that water pot and poked the eye out of Shukracharya, and the water came out. And therefore, Vamana took everything from Bali Maharaj, you know, first step, cover the earth, second step, the whole universe, and creak the hole in the universe, and then third step, yeah, I don't have anywhere to put it, and Bali Maharaj offered him his very self. And therefore, he surrendered to Krishna and became a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Shukracharya, at that point, became Krishna's eternal enemy, and he tries to stop the Sankirtan movement whenever he gets a chance. But he is very intelligent, very thoughtful. He is a politician. I mean, many good politicians are demons. I mean, in the Mahabharata, we have so many good politicians that were demons. So we're not interested in politicians. Actually, Tanaka Panda says, don't trust politicians. Be very careful about it. Okay, so we'll continue with text 38 tomorrow. Actually, let me just write this down. So, and now we can go back to our questions and answers. Nice to see everybody here. Let's unmute everybody. So we'll give some people a chance who have not asked questions continually. We have some people, like Sumuk, who's asking questions every night. And we have other people who have not asked questions in a long time, like Radhasundari, or Saki, or who else? Madhvacharya. Who? All right, so who has a question now? This is your opportunity. Nobody has a question. Amazing.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Please accept my humble obeisance.
I've got a question, Gurudev.
Likewise, Gurudev.
You have a question?
Yes, Gurudev. Just as you were saying that you had a habit of having very much fond of having pizza and cheese, and you managed to get out of that habit. I mean, personally, when I basically reflect and analyze about myself, I have got some bad habits as well. And sometimes I find that I've got so many anarthas in me. So how do I get to basically get out of it? How do I take that out of me? I mean, how, in terms of devotion, what do I need to do?
Well, you just think of what's best for serving Krishna and your spiritual master, and also for your family. Let's talk about food habits right now. Like if you think about your family, you're your wonderful daughter, and you think, what's the best thing I can... Let's forget about Krishna now for a second. Of course, that's interesting, forgetting about Krishna. But let's say if you just think about your family, you're a nice husband, and Shiona, your daughter, that's the name of your daughter, Shiona. If you just think, what's the best way I can have good health to be able to serve my family, then automatically you'll do the right thing. But if you think of giving up, it's just very difficult. So things should be done for a positive purpose. And that's really what got me to change my way of life. I just thought, I'm Prabhupada's servant. What would please Prabhupada more? How can I serve Prabhupada? How can I live longer? Like you see, everybody is so worried now about the coronavirus. Well, Fiji, you don't have coronavirus anymore. But actually, the funny thing is that more people die from lifestyle diseases than coronavirus. Like in Fiji, I think you have the highest, not you personally, but Fiji has the highest rate of diabetes of almost any country in the world, right? That's called a lifestyle. It'd be interesting, just like the government in Fiji, they imposed so many restrictions when there was the coronavirus there, lockdown and everything like that. Mm-hmm. What would happen if they took it so seriously with people's diet? They would just lock down people, close down. Actually, they have to close down the devotee restaurant too, with all the sweets, especially Diwali time. But the point is, these things are killing just as much as the coronavirus is. Or what cigarettes? I mean, I know you, no one there smokes cigarettes.
Yes.
But just like cigarettes, I mean, how many people die each year from cigarette smoking? And I forget exactly how many. It's several million in the world. It's much more, it's actually much more than are dying from the coronavirus, which is really interesting. So can you imagine the government saying, all right, we got a cigarette virus, everybody stop smoking. There'd be a rebellion. There'd be revolutions all over the world or whatever. So anyway, so you can't really stop just by wanting to stop or change by wanting to change. You have to have a good reason for doing that. And the good reason should be based on love and devotion. What's the best thing I can do for my family?
Okay.
And I think, what's the best thing I can do for my spiritual master? And also my disciples, I'm thinking, if I were to pass away prematurely because I was eating pizza, what would they put on my tombstone? they would say, he died a happy sannyasi with pizza in his mouth. Anyway,
So, thank you, Gurudev. Thank you for that. That's a good answer. Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
So if I think about my disciples, and also if I think about Nice So-So. Anyway, that's a joke. Inside joke. If I think about, Prabhupada, Krishna, then I think what's best for my service, then automatically I do the best things. But if I think about giving it up, it's very hard. I was just speaking to someone today about giving up eating eggs, and I was explaining the same principle to them. They're not initiated yet, but it's just why we have to understand the why factor, not just what we're doing or what we're giving up, but there's a why factor, why we're doing what we're doing. That's important. All right. I think that's
thank
good.
You for that.
Thank you, Saki. I wish I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, we really miss you here, Gurudev.
If you could figure out how to get me a PR for Fiji, then I could go there at the time.
Definitely, you can get one for you, Gurudev.
Because once someone has a PR, then even if there's a restriction on foreigners, I can still go.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah,
we could definitely. I could definitely have a look at it.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. Then, once there's a PR, then even if there's a virus or something like that, they don't keep residents out.
Oh, okay.
The same thing in America. Yes, like, yeah, so you can see if it's practical. Maybe Parshuram could do something.
Definitely. I'll liaise with them then, Guru. Yeah, it will be very nice having you here more often then.
Yeah, I can. Let's see what Krishna wants. All right. Who else has? I think Mayapur had a question, if I think. No.
No, yes, Gurudev.
Yes, what's the question?
So it's very important. You were mentioning the other day that we don't hinder somebody else's Krishna consciousness by encouraging or allowing for them to do things that they shouldn't be doing. Like, how do we know when we're responsible for somebody else's engagements that might not be productive for their own Krishna consciousness?
Well, I mean, but basically you got to cut people's slack too. You can't just like, I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to give people a little salt with their food, as Prabhupada said. So that's, you know, that's really takes some discrimination. Like, you know, sometimes, let's say if you have children, sometimes you have to take them to Disneyland. Although it's boring. Actually, it's a miserable experience. But
you never took me to Disneyland, Guru Dave.
I took Jai Bhattakumaris to Disneyland. And that was fun. No, it wasn't fun. It was boring, but at least he paid for it, so I wasn't in misery. So, you know, sometimes you got to cut people a little slack. This is not like basic training of the Marines, the Special Services, or something like that. Got to cut people slack, you know, and you shouldn't discourage people, but to Krishna says, but you encourage people to work in a spirit of devotion. So that's the whole point. We have to be positive. You know, if we go around telling people this is Maya, that's Maya, that's Maya, then it's just, you know, it's actually quite unattractive. So we just have to present something that's so nice. Just like I'm right here in front of Radha Golokananda, you can see here. And they're so nice. And if they're, and by dressing them nicely, I don't want to dress nicely myself. Because they're dressed so nicely, I lost the desire to put earrings in and all sorts of jewelry on myself. See, I'm just practical. I just wear saffron rags every day. But if it wasn't for them, you know, I'd be dressed like a dapper gentleman. Anyway, you get the idea. Okay, any other questions? Okay, Charna, you have a question. Ask.
Hare Krishna to all. I want to ask, because I have this problem, this sentence, to make balance between joy and sorrow, and what is the best way to make this balance, and how to be smart and intelligent?
Well, just think carefully. We all need a certain amount of sense gratification. You know, and everybody needs a different amount. I don't know your amount, and you don't know my amount. And so, it's like salt. You put too much salt in, you get high blood pressure. And too little salt, the thing is tasteless. I remember many years ago, I tried to be really austere, much more austere than I am now. And I lost the desire to eat when that happened. I just thought, I'm going to really be austere and everything. And I didn't want to eat anymore, and I was losing weight. And then that didn't work. And then other times, you know, I was like Lord Buddha. and then other times I thought, well, I'll just eat a lot of prasadam. You know, you go back to Godhead eating a lot of prasadam. That didn't work either. So I took the middle path. But that the middle path is different for everybody. You know, some people the middle path is being a sannyasi. Other people the middle path is being married. Other people the middle path is, you know, whatever. But I can't answer that question for any particular individual. You know, it's just like whatever you need. You know, someone may need a water bed to sleep in. Someone else may sleep on the floor. But that's not that sleeping on the floor is better or worse than sleeping on a big comfortable bed. Everybody needs a little bit of sense grad, right? Sense grad, Kijai. Anyway.
I want to talk between sorrow and ecstasy.
Between sorrow, you should always be ecstasy. If you're not happy, there's one of two reasons. One, you're not getting enough sense grad, and two, you're not getting enough Krishna. So you have to have a balanced life. If you get Krishna and you get enough of your what you need to keep your body and soul and mind together. We talk about body and soul, we also talk about mind. You know, people need tasty prasadam. Like one time, they were giving Prabhupada just boiled vegetables, and Prabhupada said, let the starvation committee go to hell. So you have to understand, Prabhupada was, of course, he was taking our position, as great acharyas do, and showing us that, no, you need some taste, but not overdo it. It's a healthy medium, and everybody has to decide what their medium is. Don't ask the guru to tell you what, because it's not going to happen. That's your business. Decide what you need. Now, I just need 3 or 4 computers and several mobile phones. And, you know. And actually, you know, with diet, I'm very happy. Right now, I'm just basically eating. At night, I just eat raw food and something called kasha. Some of you may not know what kasha is. It's buckwheat. It's toasted buckwheat. Those of you from Europe would know what I'm talking about. Kasha is a European dish. That's all I'm eating. And some, you know, vegetables and kasha at night. And sauerkraut. But if I present it to any of you, and an avocado. So if I present it to any of you, I got to. But if I would say, this is your whole diet every day, you would just probably just go crazy. And for some of you, it may be too much sense grad. So everybody's different. Everybody's different. Just chill out. Be happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And don't worry about how much everybody else eats. Like there was a story in the early days. There's one devotee, Kirtananda. And he said to Prabhupada, he was complaining because everybody was eating these sweet balls. And he said to Prabhupada that I think we should restrict these sweet balls to one per person per day. And when Prabhupada heard that, Prabhupada said, I think you should be restricted to one a day, but everybody else can take as much as they want. So don't impose your standards on anyone else. Okay. So, any other questions? No other questions. All right. Radha Sundar, you have a question.
Yes, Gurudev. Dandavat Pranam. I just wanted to ask about, you know how you said Shuklacharya? He was a guru of the demons.
Yeah.
And then he is still around, you know, in politicians and in some people. So how do we deal with people like this, Gurudev? Because they are, you know, like in some households, there are some demons available.
Well, if I were a Christian, I'd say you'd take a silver cross and say, In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you, I command you, demon, come out of there. Since I'm not a Christian. Since I'm not a Christian. Or if I was in Fiji, I'd probably send you to the nearest Muslim witch doctor.
Because, you know, when you listen to Kirtan and, you know, like, it just, these demons, they just don't like it. So I just know, I just want to know.
So, so avoid them. So you avoid them. As a second class devotee, we're supposed to avoid people who are envious and show those qualities. You can't change people. If you're a first class devotee like Prabhupada, you can change people. But I don't spend time trying to change people. You know, if they don't want to be changed, they don't want to be changed. That's their karma.
I've learned it the way, because my father never changed any of us, Gurudev. He just wanted us to come to Krishna consciousness on our own will. So, you know, so we all came on our own will. He never tried to change us.
Yes, but your sister tried to change you, right?
My sister tried to change me?
Yeah.
My sister engaged me in service, yes.
Yeah, she was very
But
tricky.
In a different way. Yeah, she was very tricky.
Yeah, she tried to change me. You. She tried to change you by being tricky. She worked. It
yes,
worked.
In a tricky way. Tricky way she did.
So you can change. Way. You can change people by being tricky.
Sometimes some demons you can't trick, Gurudev, trust me. And, this Maya is too much with them.
Then just call for the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, you just, you know, and another thing, Gurudev, no matter how much Mahaprasad or Prasad you give them, it just doesn't work.
Don't wait, then don't waste your time with them.
Yeah.
Don't waste your time. It's just, what can you do? All right, good.
Yeah, because you know how you gave me the instruction about my cousin. You know, I tried my very best. So
yeah,
I gave them everything, chanting beads, Mahaprasad, go to them, associate with them, but it's just not happening. They're just into too much demigods.
It's nothing you can do. Mm. Spend your time, like if you're going to go harvest food, you harvest the ripe fruits, not the fruits that are spoiled. You let the birds eat the spoiled fruits. Okay. I think we have to end. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Prabhupada.